Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić unambiguously has stated that he believes that we are only 3 to 4 months from a major confrontation between NATO and Russia, and possibly before that time. I repeat, when asked by a Swiss interviewer, a relatively neutral and surprisingly non-argumentative one at that, whether or not World War III was imminent, the Serbian president responded that I believe we are only 3 to 4 months away from a major confrontation between NATO and Russia, possibly before that time, and that our country is checking our reserves of oil, flour, sugar, and salt, because I don't know what tomorrow will bring. Now, I would encourage everybody to watch this 1 hour long, incredibly somber in tone interview. And you tell me if you think this guy is an unreasonable person that the Western media has him characterized to be. I don't claim to be the best judge of character. I've made some mistakes in terms of my assessment of the authenticity of various individuals in the past, but I can say with certainty that this guy appears to be a reasonable man. And at least as far as compared to our leaders, who are either lying or spouting unintelligible babble, he appears to not be using inflammatory language against his opponents. He's using statesman-like language. He's being very even-keeled and non-sensational, non-aggrandizing in his language. You have to really give this guy a listen. And if he's saying that we have 3 to 4 months before we cross the kinetic Rubicon of World War III, because the implacable demands of Russia and NATO are at an impasse, then my friends, you need to get your ass in gear. Do not expect that the lying media, who will likely have me shut down at some point, and you know when I get shut down, who tends to be very apolitical as far as a lot of the wing nuts are concerned here on YouTube, and that is not saying that I'm better than those people, it's just saying I tend to be more of a moderate on a lot of these issues. When they shut down the moderates, that's when you know the ration cards are coming. That's when you know the martial law is coming. That's when you know the war lockdown is coming, because they need to silence any dissenting voice that might rock the boat. So prepare, 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 carpe diem to the greatest extent possible. Right now, I'm going to enumerate exactly how I believe we're going to get there and what the nexus of this inflection point is going to be. I would encourage you to go and check out that interview, though, because he says something else that was very interesting, and I'll just say this. If you bet that someone is bluffing, it means that you have no better cards. That's an incredible analogy for, and it's in reference to, of course, NATO's belief that Russia is bluffing with nuclear weapons. They're playing a game of chicken. Essentially, what he's saying is that NATO is a paper tiger, at least as it pertains to fighting a peer-to-peer conflict. We don't have the conventional forces to fight a war against the Russians. We simply do not. So what does that mean? That means that somebody is bluffing. Somebody is preparing to go to nuclear war. We know that within the span of a couple weeks, there'll be 3 Minuteman missile tests. Nobody's talking about it. Right now, you got Russian nuclear-powered submarine off the coast. Where is it? Of Florida. Okay? Off the coast of Florida with 4 Russian warships. Nobody's talking about it in the MSM, right? What are they talking? I don't even know what they're talking about. I assure you it's probably not this. Do not expect that they're going to tell you the truth, because they have no vested interest in doing so. It's not profitable to tell them. I'm not trying to give you a speech. I'm not saying you got to go and protest or any of that. I'm saying you got to prepare for you and your family. This is what's going to go down. It's all about the F-16s. And the Russian nuclear rhetoric, as I'm going to talk about today, is in uncharted territory. The F-16s. So, the head of aviation for the Ukrainian Air Force, Holubtsov, has said today that the F-16s, which partners are transferring to Ukraine, get a load of this, will be stored at secure air bases outside the country to prevent them from becoming targets of Russian attacks. What have I been saying all along? The F-16s are the Rubicon that gets crossed. That's it. All the Russophiles, for the longest time, of course, I get called a Russophile. I get called a NATO shill. I mean, that's the unfortunate nature of being a moderate is you get attacked from all sides. But I've been saying for the longest time that it's not about the capabilities of the F-16 as a conventional weapon. Yes, it's about their ability to wield nuclear weapons. Lavrov has been abundantly clear about that, the Russian foreign minister. It's about the fact that in order to use them, you essentially have to use them from surrounding countries. Because the runways need to be so finely groomed and manicured for these things to work. I'm not an expert in terms of military aviation, but based on what I know, to use the F-16s, it requires a very sophisticated infrastructure that Ukraine simply doesn't have. And if they had it, apparently a few weeks ago, the Russians targeted those airstrips that they were planning on using. So this means that by necessity, they must be flown from countries outside of Ukraine. Now, two stories came about today that you probably didn't hear if you were in Western MSM La La Land. One, the Russians said definitively that if Ukraine flies these F-16s from outside of Ukraine, that they are going to target the bases from which these planes emerge. That, of course, is crossing Article 5. That is what Vucic is talking about. Now, the Ukrainians are making the claim, and get a load of the, I mean, this is actually quite clever what they're saying. They're saying that they're going to be deployed outside Ukraine, but the ones that are in use, so they're going to put the ones that are in reserve outside Ukraine so that the Russians can attack those, but they're going to be using a few from inside Ukraine. Now, the problem is, I don't know much about radars and aviation, but I'm going to presume if you were coming in over the border and you were low flying enough that the Russians might not be able to detect that on their radars. So how are you going to be able to tell whether these F-16s are emerging from a Ukrainian airstrip, some bunker in the ground somewhere, or if they were coming over the border? Maybe somebody can clarify that in the comment section. Can they detect if these things are low flying enough? Because if they can't, the Russians are going to be faced with having to target the NATO bases from which they know these F-16s originate. And that means the kinetic beginning of World War III. And it's about to start. His most bullish case for the beginning of World War III is 3 to 4 months. This is being echoed by numerous other leaders who are being demonized by NATO, some NATO country leaders, okay, who are saying that we don't have much time to prepare for this. This is absolutely crazy. And all of these countries who are giving the F-16s, most of them have already greenlit Ukraine to target inside Russian territory. Now, this is important because within the last 24 hours, for the first time documented throughout the war, the Ukrainians have struck Russian targets using fighter jets inside Russia. Okay, the first ever time that this is documented to happen. Now, the question is, was it an F-16 or was it an Su-24? Of course, the Russians would likely be able to detect that. The question is, would they admit it? Would they admit it? Because even the Russians are being very particular in their language, almost as if inviting the Ukrainians to use F-16s. I don't think that's the case. Don't get me wrong. I think they view this as a legitimate threat because of their capability to deliver nuclear weapons. Maybe they want to collect intelligence on them. Who knows? And maybe this is why they haven't been used, because they're trying to make sure that the Russians can't gain too much intelligence on those systems in combating them. Because, of course, you're only one step away from the F-22 and the F-35, and that's the best we got, right? So if you start throwing your best stuff or your second best stuff at the Russians, then they're going to be able to course correct. And if you do get into a war with them thereafter, they're going to be better prepared for it. So perhaps we are the reason why we're reluctant, because we don't want to see F-16s being blown out of the sky. That's a possibility. Either way, these planes are going to have to emerge from the surrounding countries. I think that's the only way this is going to happen, unless there's some underground airstrips that they're going to open the doors to and the planes are going to fly out. It's a possibility. I mean, Ukraine, Cold War era Ukraine, I'm sure has tons of underground infrastructure like that. But as far as I know, this is likely what is going to happen. So even the Russians, though, they're using this language, which is saying as long as the planes are launching and flying their sorties from Ukrainian territory and not doing this thing where, okay, they fly over from Romania, touch down in Ukraine, and then launch a bunch of attacks, possibly nuclear ones against the Russians, as far as the Russians are concerned, and then go back to Romania. You know, these sort of technicalities and this legal minutia, is that going to basically force Russia's hand in this, to allow this to unfold? It's going to be a very, very interesting summer as far as this escalation is concerned. And I feel as though this is what's compelling me to build my own ark. And I say that non-religiously. I look at this empirically, matter of fact, that everything I've done in my life has brought me to this point in preparedness right in the nick of time. Now, this doesn't mean that you need to make haste and just go out and make rash financial decisions. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the time to maximize, the time to be the best person, the time to get in physical, tip-top physical condition to work those extra hours while the getting is good. If you can go to a job and they're going to pay you overtime to do stuff, now is the time to do it. If you have opportunities, seize on those opportunities. I go by the 100-to-1 rule. It's really more like the 1,000-to-1 rule, because the amount of energy you need to exhibit right now to get commodities, to get services, is minimal when compared to what it's going to be when this grid down situation unfolds, or if we just enter some dystopian age of perpetual war and government, tighter government controls. It's going to be very hard. People are going to look at this like the old days, getting up to go to that job that you thought was incredibly shitty and unrewarding. You're going to miss that, okay? So that's what's going on the F-16 front. The Institute for the Study of War is claiming that only 14% of Russia is being permitted to be attacked by NATO-made weaponry, but 14% of the largest country on Earth is big. Okay, I think Russia is not twice the size of the United States, but it's a very, very large country. And of course, most of the Russian population is in close proximity to Ukraine, definitely well within the range of a lot of NATO missiles. Numerous strategic facilities, command and control facilities, airstrips are within range. This war is getting out of control. Now, politically, you're seeing a lot of movement right now, and you're seeing a lot of people bank on this movement towards the far right in Europe as being some redeeming factor in terms of diffusing tensions in this conflict. But just remember, the president of Italy, what's her name? Giorgia Meloni. Remember when she said that, you know, that was one of the campaign promises? Everybody thought that she was going to start to take a more dovish tone on Russia. Well, the complete opposite came true. And the reason is because they all buy their weapons from the United States. Germany today has chosen nuclear-capable F-35s over gas, over economic prosperity. They all want the weapons instead. So that's what's going down. The Russians admitted that they lost one of their most advanced Su-57 fighter jets. They claim that they have 20 of these. I guess the equivalent would be like a Raptor, as far as I know. Like, this is their most advanced fighter jet. It's debatable how many sorties they've flown in this war. I don't think it's been that many. But the Ukrainians targeted one successfully. And the Russians don't deny it. They admit it, that yes, you destroyed our best plane. It was just a sitting duck on an airstrip, which is dumb. Right now, the Russians, you know, slow to harness, fast to ride, as the saying goes. They will course correct, and they'll do exactly what they've done all along. But if this was, and this was actually 500 kilometers into Russia, so it's very likely that this wasn't using NATO weapon systems, that it was a drone, possibly. But we don't know. We really don't know what's going on the front line. They always roll these things out a few weeks earlier and then tell us at a later date, oh yeah, we secretly gave Ukraine Storm Shadow missiles. We secretly gave them ATACMs. When Vucic is talking about a 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 month timeline, assuming that we're about a month behind in the secrets, I mean, imagine what's really already going on there if we're approaching that eventuality. If you don't know, the Russians currently have 4 warships and a nuclear-powered submarine en route to Cuba. Apparently, this passed by Florida today, and you have this Boeing P-8 Poseidon tracking it right off the coast of Florida, which is quite a flex. And it shows you that, indeed, as Vucic is claiming, if you think the other guy is bluffing, then that must mean you have really shitty cards. And NATO is, in fact, a paper tiger, at least when it comes to a peer-to-peer conflict. But everybody is, for that matter. We've seen the stalemate in just one little country in Ukraine. Neither side is making a lot of headway in spite of billions, probably hundreds of billions of dollars, and people thrown into this conflict against their will that the Western media is not reporting on at all. You could do a whole documentary just on the forced conscription and how draconian it is as it's happening in Ukraine. We're talking about training schoolgirls how to hold guns. We're talking about dual citizens not being allowed to leave the country. Guys dying because they're trying to get across the border, mining the border so they can't cross the border. I mean, they even want the instructors to come in now. And I think part of the reason is multifold. It's because they want to collect intelligence and command things from the front. They don't want the Russians to get all the experience points, but they also realize that if you let these Ukrainians leave the country to go and train at like a UK base or a German base or a Polish base, there's a good chance they're going to go AWOL and they ain't going to come back, especially if they're one of the ones that have been forcefully conscripted, okay? So I'm telling you, man, and this is what concerns me, is that we are morally bankrupt in the West. And when you understand the psychology of that and what that's going to mean, that means that fundamentally on a axiomatic level, we are immoral because we're doing that to people in Ukraine. And if you think you're any different, especially in light of how we see our governments, you know, treat us at every turn, we're in for a rude awakening in terms of the reality of the underpinnings of this system. It looks all fine and dandy right now because the supply chain is moving. But watch how ugly people get. Watch how ugly government institutions get when this shit starts to fall apart. This is proven in social psychology experiments that I don't have to get into. But scary times are ahead and you need to get yourself squared away. The U.S. wouldn't rescue allies in a nuclear war. Moscow hopes Western escalation won't lead to a nuclear exchange. So he's hoping for a limited nuclear conflict. He doesn't think that the U.S. is going to come to the aid to Europe. And quite frankly, I don't either. I think that the whole 300,000 corridors that NATO is creating inside Europe for the Americans to swoop in and save the day, that's just probably something that they're having their hand forced by the United States to come in there thereafter when the smoke clears and to try to either it's for the purpose of mitigating post-disaster or it's for the purpose of a preemptive strike, nuclear strike against Russia. Because just nothing about having a conventional war between Europe and Russia makes sense at this point in time. Certainly not within a 3 to 4 month time span. Now, that may just be the point when things really start, when we see a major incident, and when there is an Article 4 emergency. That's when you have all of the leaders coming together to decide whether or not they're going to trigger Article 5. If you have that, that's what's going to precede the mass mobilization, the conscription, the war economies, and of course, this is all coincidentally timed with these upcoming elections in France and in the UK. You gotta ask yourself, why is the UK and France now suddenly having elections at the same time? You think that's a coincidence that it's all happening before the American elections? I think he's right. I don't think we have that much time. There is a lot of incentive to stir the pot and kick the hornet's nest right now by a lot of people. Everybody, in fact, involved has a vested interest in doing that. According to the head of the British Army, he warns that there's every chance, this is Patrick Sanders, who is going to be retiring soon, that World War III could hit Europe soon. Now, what does he mean by soon? Everybody has a different understanding of what soon is. For some people, it is 3 to 4 months. For others, it's 2 to 3 years. For others, they use these really outlandish projections of 20 years. You know, the Europe might be going to war with Russia in 20 years. What? I mean, imagine, like, what could possibly happen in 20 years? How could you be able to predict the future, you know, that far ahead? But that's what some people predict, 20 years. Anywhere between 3 to 4 months and 20 years. That's a pretty broad range. I think we will be lucky. We will be very lucky if there is not a major conflagration before 2027. And I'm talking globally. I am hoping we have that long. I'm not ready for this shit to start this summer. And remember, it's not like it's just going to be, I mean, it could just go full on nuclear right away, but there's going to be disruptions in the run-up. So you're going to reach a point where there's some sort of embargo or blockade, or some of the international shipping corridors are going to be blocked, and you're not going to be able to, or the prices are going to, that's going to lead to price inflation. It is going to lead to scarcity of various raw materials to make certain things. And then you're going to have the thing with China blow up, as we're going to talk about in a moment. And all of this is going to complicate the ability to do what you need to do to prepare for the worst case scenario. So the worst case scenario is not just going to be an abrupt shift into grid down, lights out. It could, but what is more likely is we're going to see a progression of the same incremental escalation. And suddenly you're not going to be able to get X, Y, and Z, or it's going to be harder to get it, or it's going to come at a greater premium in order to get it, or there's going to be more government regulations in place. That's why you got to do what you got to do now while the getting is good. Where should we go here? Now, this is important. In the last 2 weeks, I have seen, because I study Russian media. And the reason why I study it is because, not because I believe that the Russian media is more truthful than the Western media. I wouldn't go that far. I just believe that the Russians are more sophisticated in their propaganda. Here, it's just a bunch of, like, it's clown show. It's clown world. There, at least, they're a bit more sophisticated. Anyways, the last 2 weeks, I've seen on 3 occasions, the Russians talk about flexing their nuclear muscle in some capacity in order to de-escalate the conflict with the West. That might seem counterintuitive, but here are 3 quotes from key Russian academics and pundits. Number one is from Dmitry Tenin. This is today, June 10th, Russian International Affairs. To prevent a world war, it is necessary to strengthen deterrence by activating the nuclear factor in foreign policy. What does he mean by activate? And restoring fear and building a ladder of escalation. Essentially, what he's saying, without saying it, is that they need to demonstrate their nuclear capability in some respect, whether that means using a nuclear weapon on the battlefield or restarting nuclear testing. Now, Sergei Kraganov, former foreign policy advisor to the Russian president, has also stated that Russia should revise its nuclear doctrine and lower its nuclear threshold in order to deter the West from pursuing reckless policies. He, in fact, thinks that not only should we just do a test, that a test is going to be insufficient. Because a test, the West are going to call that as a bluff. And they're going to say, oh, well, you're just doing a test. And all that's going to do is desensitize Westerners to nuclear attacks. Sure, at the first time that the Russians launch the nuke and do the test in the middle of Siberia, people are going to be shocked. It's going to be front page news. But quickly, people are going to be lulled back into a state of complacency. They're going to get used to it, just like they did throughout the last 40, 50 years of nuclear testing. It seems crazy to believe, but, you know, I mean, when you think about the news cycle nowadays and how easily people are distracted, it's going to be a big shocker for a couple weeks, but people are going to quickly get used to the fact that they're doing nuclear testing again, as crazy as that sounds. And even Biden just the other day said, yeah, we're probably going to have to increase our nuclear arsenals because in order to match what the Chinese have and the Russians have, we have to have as much as both of them have combined. And this is like a never-ending death spiral because then the Russians are going to say, well, we need to have as many as Russia and China have combined, even though we're China's allies, and China's going to say the same thing. And you're off to a nuclear arms race where there's going to be 50,000 nukes in either countries. And that, of course, is recipe for disaster. So, thirdly, Dmitry Suslov, Russian counsel on foreign defense, on May 30th said, it's time for Russia to think about a demonstrative nuclear test. The U.S.-led bloc has lost its fear of the mushroom cloud, but seeing one would perhaps focus some minds. So we do have three points of view. Essentially, one advocating for a demonstrative strike, one advocating for something maybe a bit more ambiguous, and one, I think, clearly laying out why they need to use something more aggressive. You have to. It's kind of like, I guess a good analogy would be, this is why they train cops to shoot center mass. You know, you might think, well, why don't you just fire off a warning shot, or why don't you just shoot him in the leg? Because if you screw that up, it could be potentially fatal. And that's just going to piss the guy off even more, right? And he's going to come after you even harder. And you're going to have missed that window to take him out. Not necessarily in terms of doing a preemptive full-on nuclear strike, but taking him out. How much time do we got left on the clock? 6%? Oh my! We're going to have to cut this short. I was not prepared today. Actually, you know what I could possibly do? I could. No, that cord's not going to reach. Okay, we talked about the Su-57 destroyed. Let me just see what else we got. I'm going to quickly bang this out here because this is going to get cut off right away. South Korea and the U.S. are holding a new round of nuclear planning talks. So the North Koreans did a simulated preemptive strike on South Korea. You can bet that if South Korea ever came out of the nuclear umbrella under the United States, they're going to want nuclear weapons, and they will get them. Russia ready to strike NATO airfields hosting Ukrainian jets. What have I been saying? The Luftwaffe is getting nuclear-capable F-35s. What could possibly go wrong? South Korea started blasting stuff on the loudspeakers. This is just another scene of the idiocracy currently unfolding in the United States of America. It looks like some sort of blend between a scene in The Joker and Idiocracy, the street racing, fireworks thing, people wanting to get hit by these cars spinning around in a circle. I mean, this has to be the dumbest possible pastime. Maybe I just don't get it. I don't know. I mean, I guess they're not shooting people, but usually that happens at those things. This is the U.S. Army. Is it a Commander Clemente? Basically saying, Colonel Rosanna Clemente, Assistant Chief of Staff to the U.S. 10th Army, admitting that the U.S. helped shoot down a Russian AWACS plane with a Patriot system. That's how close we are to nuclear Armageddon, folks. I can't even go into the details about that. The North Koreans are basically dropping leaflets, or this is actually China dropping leaflets on islands within Taiwan, basically saying that reunification is inevitable, blah, blah, blah. Yes, the war is heating up on that front. This idiot, of course, calling for war on every possible front whatsoever. I don't understand this guy. I don't know if he's just paid. I think he's just trolling half the time when he says half the shit he does. But essentially, he's saying we need to go to war with Iran, Russia, and China all at once. What else is new? Some charts. Historically speaking, the Dow Jones Industrial Average looks a lot like it did in 2008. Now, again, this is just technical analysis, so it's really just astrology. But when you look, 1999, you had the bubble, then you had the crash down to 2003, then it went up and up and up until 2008, and then boom! And that's where they think we are at right now, a similar cycle. And I would have to say that I agree. Look at this, average daily options volume at a new record, 50 million contracts, nearly. That's crazy volatility, although that's not reflected in the VIX, the volatility index, the top 10% of stocks by size versus the entire US stock market. We got 2% left, is at the same point as it was during, right before the Great Depression. And this idiot is saying, hey, we should embrace AI and we should just let it run riot, let it run rogue. And you know what that means? That means that the government's probably going to use it against us. Now, I got a lot of other stuff to talk about in terms of a Polish plant going up in flames. It was probably the Russians. We got evacuations from Crimea. We got the Polish government arming the borders. We got Russian pundits calling for arming of Venezuela, Mexico, and Cuba with nuclear ICBMs. My goodness. Keep on prepping. Go to CanadianPreparedness.com to support the channel. Get your ass in gear. Well, the time is right. Thanks for watching, guys.